Yeshua had indeed risen from the dead. He first appeared to the women at the tomb who had come to anoint his body with burial spices on the morning of the first day of the week after the Sabbath. At first, no one would believe them as they related their experiences to the disciples gathered in the house. Peter and John ran to the tomb to see for themselves and found the empty tomb and the neatly folded grave clothes just as the women had reported. Whenever I read this story, I'm reminded of a song recorded back in the 1980s by Don Francisco titled "He's Alive," that tells the story of Yeshua's resurrection in poetic verse set to a powerful musical backdrop. The Master was nowhere to be found. Had he actually risen from the grave as the women had reported, or had his body been relocated by the Romans or the high priest and the corrupt Sadducees? What had become of him? There were key witnesses chosen by God beforehand to speak boldly of the risen Messiah. Look at Acts 10:40 through 41. "Him God raised up on the third day and showed him openly, not to all the people, but to witnesses chosen before by God, even to us who ate and drank with him after he rose from the dead." After his resurrection, Yeshua did not appear before great multitudes as he had done many times during his earthly ministry. He did not return to the temple to clean it of its corrupted state and establish his kingdom on earth as many expected him to do. Yet the prophecies that Yeshua had often spoken of throughout his ministries, prophecies that the disciples and followers at the time had little understanding of what they meant, were about to play out in a powerful way. The disciples had the eyewitness testimony of the women who went to Yeshua's burial tomb, but none of them thus far had seen the risen Messiah for themselves. Jewish tradition of the day did not require them to remain in Jerusalem for the entire Feast of Unleavened Bread. Many were engaged in preparations to return to their homes and lives in the Galilee region. Although the details of which are lost to history, Simon Peter was the first of the disciples to encounter the risen Yeshua. Paul establishes Peter's encounter in his first epistle to the Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 15, 3-5. "For I delivered to you, first of all, that which I also received, that Christ died for our sins, according to the Scriptures, and that he was buried, and that he rose again the third day, according to the Scriptures. And he was seen by Cephas, then by the 12. Sometime, most likely before Simon Peter's encounter with Yeshua, two of the disciples departed for home, traveling on the road between Jerusalem and the village known as Emmaus." Luke 24, verse 13. "Now behold, two of them were traveling that same day to a village called Emmaus, which was 7 miles from Jerusalem." Identifying the exact village which these disciples were traveling to is rather difficult, given that there were a number of villages known by the name Emmaus. The name Emmaus is of Greek origin. It's number 1695 in the Strong's lexicon, and according to the Word Study Dictionary, outside of its use as a proper name for a place, the word means hot springs. So the original site of this village is unknown, but was most likely located on the major route between Jerusalem and the Galilee, about 7 miles north of Jerusalem. The Greek manuscripts used the Greek measurement of stadion to describe the village's location, of which 60 stadion cover the distance to Emmaus. A stadion is approximately equivalent to a modern-day furlong, which is about 1/8 mile. One of the two disciples traveling on the road that day was a man named Cleopas. Although a common name at the time, this Cleopas was probably the same Cleopas mentioned in John 19, verse 25, the husband of the Mary who accompanied Mary, the mother of Yeshua, at the cross. Cleopas was Yeshua's uncle, the brother of his earthly father, Joseph. As Cleopas and the other unnamed disciple were walking along the road, I can imagine that they were brokenhearted and depressed over the events of the preceding days. While on this journey, a stranger joined them. Luke 24, verses 14 through 16. "And they talked together of all these things which had happened. So it was while they conversed and reasoned that Jesus himself drew near and went with them. But their eyes were restrained, so they did not know him. Mark's gospel records that Yeshua's appearance was different, and that is why they did not recognize him. Mark 16, verse 12. After that, he appeared in another form to two of them as they walked and went into the country. Although Yeshua, in his resurrected and glorified state, was indeed flesh and bone, his resurrected glory was different than his previous earthly glory. Paul speaks of this differing glory in his first letter to the Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 15, 39 through 42. All flesh is not the same flesh, but there is one kind of flesh of men, another flesh of animals, another of fish, and another of birds. There are also celestial bodies and terrestrial bodies, but the glory of the celestial one and the glory of the terrestrial is another. There is one glory of the sun, another glory of the moon, and another glory of the stars, for one star differs from another star in glory. So also is the resurrection of the dead. The body is sown in corruption, it is raised in incorruption. Not recognizing Yeshua in his resurrected state was not unusual. Mary Magdalene thought that he was the gardener. First Fruits of Zion, in their work, The Chronicles of Messiah, make an observation about their failure to recognize the Master. Some commentaries suggest that the two on the way to Emmaus did not recognize Yeshua because they were stubborn and unbelieving. Other commentaries suggest that the devil blinded them to the Master's identity. On the contrary, Luke says that their eyes were prevented from recognizing him. Luke 24, verse 16. Jewish writers typically use passive constructions like this as a way of protecting the name of God. Now, as they walked along the road, Yeshua engaged them in a conversation. Luke 24, 17 through 21. And he said to them, "What kind of conversation is this that you have with one another as you walk and are sad?" Then the one whose name was Cleopas answered and said to him, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem, and have you not known the things which happen there these days?" And he said to them, "What things?" So they said to him, "The things concerning Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we were hoping that it was he who was going to redeem Israel. Indeed, besides all this, today is the third day since these things happened." Cleopas probably thought that this stranger was just another pilgrim returning home after the pilgrimage for Passover. Yeshua seemed to play along by asking, "What things?" Their description of Yeshua as a prophet mighty in deed and word before God perhaps reflects their disappointment about their messianic hopes for Yeshua. They did, however, recognize the responsibility of the chief priests and rulers for Yeshua's crucifixion, even though it was the Romans who actually carried it out. They had hoped that Yeshua was the one who would be the Messiah and bring the redemption of Israel. Cleopas went on to tell the stranger what the women had found earlier that morning. Luke 24, verses 22 through 24. "Yes, and certain women of our company who arrived at the tomb early astonished us. When they did not find his body, they came saying that they had also seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. And certain of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but him they did not see." When Cleopas and the other disciple set out on the road to Emmaus, the mystery of the missing body of Yeshua remained unsolved. After Cleopas relayed the details of the previous 3 days, Yeshua answered them. Luke 24, 25 through 27. "Then he said to them, 'O foolish ones and slow of heart to believe in all that the prophets have spoken. Ought not the Christ to have suffered these things and to enter into his glory?' And beginning at Moses and all the prophets, he expounded to them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself." The exact things that Yeshua shared with them on the road that day are not recorded. Cleopas and the other disciple still did not recognize this stranger as being the resurrected Yeshua. And we can imagine that Yeshua spent a great deal of time explaining the things in the Torah, the prophets, and the writings, which spoke of Messiah. Yeshua's conversation with them would have encompassed the entire body of Scripture. Perhaps they slowed their pace or occasionally stopped along the road to argue a point or two. Now, this type of discussion would not be uncommon in first century Judaism and is spoken of in the Scriptures. Look at Deuteronomy 6, verse 7. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. Up until now, the disciples did not understand Yeshua's predictions about his suffering, his death, and his resurrection. The reality of Messiah's death and resurrection can be inferred from the Hebrew Scriptures, and there are other rabbinic sources which speak of the suffering and death of the Messiah. Now, perhaps Yeshua was taking Cleopas and the other disciple back through the Scriptures and revealing them in a new light. We don't know what the ensuing discussion consisted of. All that Luke states is that Yeshua explained the prophecies contained in the Scriptures which concerned him. And we can probably infer from the text cited later by the apostles to reconstruct what Yeshua may have spoken of. Perhaps Yeshua spoke of Abraham and his promised son, through whom was promised the land and through whom all nations would be blessed. He would have spoken of the significance of the sacrifice of Isaac, the very promised son and heir. Jewish tradition says that Isaac actually died and was resurrected by God. There was the story of Joseph, who was hated and rejected by his own brothers. Later, when they themselves were in desperate need because of famine in the land, the brothers went to Egypt seeking help and did not recognize Joseph, who was now in command and second only to Pharaoh. Joseph forgave them for their betrayal nonetheless. Yeshua would have surely spoken of the sacrificial system and all its rites and ceremonies and how it all speaks so loudly of the Messiah who suffered and sacrifices for us all. Brenda and I wrote about the messianic aspects of the sacrificial system in our Shadows of the Messiah in the Torah study series in Volume 3. In reference to the prophets, Yeshua would have certainly cited Daniel, Daniel 9, verse 26. And after the 62 weeks, Messiah shall be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end of it shall be a flood. Until the end of the war, desolations are determined. Yeshua would have reminded them of the words of the prophet Zechariah, Zechariah 12, verse 10. And I will pour out on the house of David and on the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of grace and supplications. And they will look upon me, whom they pierced. Yes, they will mourn for him as one mourns for his only son, and grieve for him as one grieves for a firstborn. And from the prophet Amos, the frightening events that would have been fresh in their minds. Amos 8, verse 10. I will turn your feasts into mourning, and your songs into lamentations. I will bring sackcloth on every waist and baldness on every head. I will make it like mourning for an only son, and its end like a bitter day. The servant of the Lord prophecies of Isaiah 52:13 through 53:12 would have been a particularly powerful witness to the events of the last few days. As the Master continued to teach and share the messianic implications of the Scriptures with the disciples on the road to Emmaus, he would have discussed Psalms, particularly Psalms 22, as well as the other Psalms of David, where David speaks of his tribulations as well as his triumphs. In the Acts of the Apostles, it is recorded that they cited many times from the Psalms, particularly Psalm 16, as a prophecy of Yeshua's resurrection. Look at Psalm 16, 9 through 11. Therefore, my heart is glad, and my glory rejoices. My flesh also will rest in hope, For you will not leave my soul in Sheol, nor will you allow your Holy One to see corruption. You will show me the path of life. In your presence is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore. All through Yeshua's teachings, Cleopas and the other disciple did not recognize the stranger walking with them as the Master Yeshua. As they approached the village, they asked the stranger to stay with them. Luke 24:28-29. Then they drew near the village where they were going, and he indicated that he would have gone further. But they constrained him, saying, "Abide with us, for it is toward evening, and the day is far spent." And he went in to stay with them. Perhaps they were beginning to see all the pieces fall into place, and their spirits lifted as Yeshua spoke to them. They saw that all the events of the last few days, although frightening and tragic, were predicted long ago. Perhaps they now understood the meaning of the empty tomb. His body had not been taken away by the Romans and the chief priest's men. But if he was indeed resurrected and alive, where was he? I'm sure that with the building excitement, they wanted to know more from this amazing and knowledgeable stranger. It was only 2 days from the into the Festival of Unleavened Bread, so they prepared the evening meal. Matzah would be placed on the dinner table. Cleopas, being the eldest present, would have been the logical one to offer the blessing over the bread. But instead, he deferred to the stranger, who agreed to dine with them. During Yeshua's earthly ministry, the disciples were with him for more than 3 years, and perhaps present with him every day for every meal. As Cleopas handed off the matzah to the stranger, something amazing took place. The Bible scholar David Instone Brewer comments on this encounter at Emmaus. The story of Emmaus suggests that Yeshua had a characteristic way of blessing bread, and all the synoptics note that Yeshua looked up to heaven as he blessed the bread for the thousands. So perhaps he did this in a particularly singular way. Before Yeshua finished the blessing, the astonished disciples realized that this stranger that they had spent the last several hours with was none other than the Master himself. As Yeshua took the piece of matzah into his mouth, he vanished from their sight. Luke 24:30-31. Now it came to pass, as he sat at the table with them, that he took the bread, blessed and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they knew him, and he vanished from their sight. Can you imagine the excitement they must have experienced? They now knew beyond any shadow of a doubt that Yeshua had risen from the grave and was alive and on the earth with them. Their fears were dispensed with, and their greatest hopes were now realized. They changed their plans of returning home to the Galilee and could not wait to return to Jerusalem and tell the other disciples that he was alive. Look at Luke 24:32-35. And they said to one another, "Did not our hearts burn within us while he talked with us on the road and while he opened the scriptures to us?" So they rose up that very hour and returned to Jerusalem and found the 11 and those who were with them gathered together, saying, "The Lord is risen indeed and has appeared to Simon." And they told about the things that had happened on the road and how he was known to them in the breaking of bread. Although it was late and traveling at night was rather dangerous, Cleopas and the other disciple hurried back to Jerusalem. I can imagine that they would be out of breath when they reached the house where the other disciples were staying. As they shared their story with the others, Yeshua appeared in their midst and greeted them with, "Peace to you." Now, all of the remaining 11 closest disciples and perhaps a few others would see him and know that he was indeed risen from the dead. They all would then realize, as so well put in the last words of Don Francisco's song, "He's alive, and I'm forgiven. Heaven's gates are opened wide." I'm Dan Cathcart for Moed Ministries International. Shalom, and be blessed.